Well, I've done a little bit of research, Matthew Croak, and it seems that except for sort of greatest hits, sort of podcast recaps, you haven't appeared on the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast in over 5 years. I'm guessing you just have been kept very busy with your happy-go-lucky lifestyle of raising six daughters with your new wife. And by the way, you've written a book. Do I have that right?
You do have that right. How adorable of you to leave out the 5-year restraining order that you put on me. That's fine. Let's just skip right over that. And the 5 years is over.
Nobody needs to know.
Thrilled
that.
To be back on the RSC podcast after 5 years.
Woohoo!
And might I just say, if you look out your window right now, yes, that's me sitting in the car on the phone.
Son of a.
The restraining order is over, baby.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 533, Matt Croak's Memoir. Our old friend Matt Croak, who's on the DVD of The Complete History of America Abridged and helped us rehearse and develop the Bible, The Complete Word of God Abridged, and all the great books abridged, and encouraged, threatened, and coerced me into starting the podcast over 10 years ago, which is why I thank him every week with a new and absurd honorific at the end of every podcast episode. Anyway, young Matt Croak has just published his memoir. It's called Yes And, A Journey of Hope Through Tragedy, and it chronicles his first wife Lisa battle against cancer and what he went through to help not only her, but his three daughters. Yes And was just published last weekend and is available through Amazon, and I asked Matt to talk with me about how it all came together.
Lisa passed away. I know we did a podcast on Lisa when she did pass, but you're right. I've since remarried. Cheryl has three daughters. I'm now the father of six daughters. We have an au pair in the house from Poland, so that's eight women to myself. Work is busy, and yes, after about 7 years, I'm finally publishing my memoir from when Lisa was sick. That's coming out. Obviously, with our performing background, it's a very common phrase in improv.
It's like sort of the first rule of improvisation is to say yes to something that happens and add to the thing that has happened.
Well, and you know Kathy Davis, who was one of my former teachers at Oakton Community College, that she sat in and watched our Bible performance once and gave us notes. She always said to us, whenever you read a play or ever look at it, there's always, she said, a page or a paragraph in the play that really is what the play is about. And she was one of my beta readers. And I had some people read it just to give me some feedback before I published it. And she helped me come back and say, oh, Matt, take a look at this page. This is it. This is what the book is about. So
this is
yes,
your book right here. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, you know, it might be a little, for some people, a little esoteric of, well, what does that mean? But I think once people, you know, understand how I explain it and really what it's about, it does, you know, so much of what happened during that period when Lisa was, you know, sick with cancer was I could not have any preconceived notions of what I thought was going to happen or how I thought it was going to happen. And it's a very scary ride. And the best way to cope with it is just to say, just have an open blank slate and take what's given to you. Not happy about it, but I'm taking what's given to me. Now, what do I do with it?
Right. And there's a subtitle to your book, too, that helps clarify what you're talking about.
A Journey of Hope Through Tragedy. And I know journey, you know, can sometimes be a little overused, but you know what? Going through this process, it really was a journey, and it's an arc, and it's a game changer, it's a life changer, and you have it, you don't want it, you have it, but what do you do with it? And so with the what do I do with it, that was the journey, and watching Lisa deal with it and how she dealt with it is really what helped me understand what I needed to do, right? She was the one who had the cancer. She was the one that was losing her life. And yet she was picking out her own hospice. She was pregnant with Molly, giving birth. Her mother was passing away at the same time. So you have mother and daughter both dying of cancer within 5 months of one another. And she held her head up high. So who am I to, you know, cower in a corner and say, woe is me? And especially with three daughters.
Yeah.
So that was the hope was to continue to, you know, one of the hardest things, I don't talk about grief and too much in the book. Matter of fact, the book ends after Lisa passes, But in the grieving process, you know, it's very difficult to honor your loved one by self-improvement, but that's really the best way to honor them. Lisa, anyone, think of anyone you love. Would you say, listen, I'm gonna leave this world now, you know, please fall apart and just be a shell of yourself? No, you don't wouldn't want that. But it's an impossible thing to connect in your mind. How can I be a better person when I don't want to be living the life I'm living? And yet, by not doing it, you're not honoring that person.
Yeah,
and that
it's the greatest tribute you can pay to a person that passes, is, you know, to...
Yes. And Molly was born successfully, and I had three daughters, and the hope was, okay, let's carry on, you know, through the tragedy, and let's learn from it. Don't want to learn from it, but I, you know, you either do or you don't. And it's really faced with, you do or you don't. And so, yeah. It's what you choose to do with it.
Well, and the book didn't come out of nowhere. You had been blogging for a while. In fact, I think we talked about it on the podcast a little bit. You know, blogging about your experiences as a widower with three girls. And is that where the book came from?
No, because actually, well, the blogging was after. So like I said, I don't really talk about after Lisa passed. If, not saying they're real, if there's another book, it'd be that aspect of it. This was strictly the 9-month period when we were in the hospital. Lisa's pregnant. She has fluid around her heart. And the doctor basically sat on the bed and said, we need to terminate the pregnancy and we need to get that fluid around your heart or it's going to collapse one of the chambers and that's going to be it. And Lisa, and I hear that and I'm like, whatever he says, like, let's do this right now. And Lisa unflinchingly said, no, she started asking questions. When's it going to, you know, and he didn't have answers. She said, no, stick a needle through my chest, drain the fluid, and we're keeping the pregnancy. So that's how the book starts. My brother, Mike, mailed me, he's in Virginia, he mailed me a journal. And I opened it, and he didn't tell me, he just mailed me a journal. And I opened it, and a note that said, you know, I heard journaling, keep your thoughts down helps. So I started journaling. And I was, while Lisa was doing chemo, I would write in the journal, or doctor's appointments, I'd write in the journal. And about a year and a half after she passed, I looked in it. I had no intention of making it a book. And I looked at it. And so many people came up to me and said, wow, what was it like? What, I can't even imagine with all going on. Because like I said, her mother was also in the hospital at the same time. And I'm like, well, if you really want to know what it was like, I actually have it. So I started fleshing it out little by little. Mm-hmm. And over the next 7 years, putting it together. And then I remarried to Cheryl with the three girls. And I put it away for another 3 years, right? Because I just started a new marriage. But 3 years, I took a look at it. And I started giving it to some beta readers saying, hey, you don't know me. People didn't know me at all. And I said, feel free. Feelings will not be hurt. Say, is this something you go, oh, cute for friends and family, but not really mass appeal? And the feedback I got was, no, it's from a male perspective, and it's written just, it is what it is. I try to stay away from preaching. There are some life lessons I'm learning, but it's more just literally an open book of, here's what happened. Take from it what you will. This is what it looked like. And the beta reader said that can help people. And I'm not saying, you know, this is going to help others, but it could. If someone's going through something difficult and they want to see what it looks like or how to get through it, this is a front row seat to fights, hopes, you know, good days, bad days, setbacks, victories. It's all right there.
Well, and it seems like, I mean, this is, it's such a horrible thing to happen to anybody. I guess, particularly a woman as full of life as Lisa. But it seems as if if your title is to be believed, you took solace, strength, tips, tools, advice from your theatrical improv clowning training.
So you had the clowning training, and even Second City, I remember a teacher saying to me, I got up on stage, right? And you know, it's the Second City, you got to be funny, right? So I had like 8 ideas that I was going to do, and I was trying way too hard. And the teacher at the time, with no inflection, no criticism, no yelling, he just said, hey, you know what, Matt? This is really painful to watch. Stop trying to be funny. Just be in the moment, accept what's happening on stage. And if it's not funny, at least it's interesting. And so that, with that background, just knowing that, get rid of the preconceived notions of what is going to happen, because grief and setbacks and, you know, tumors and all that stuff. It's I cannot go into it. You would just get eaten alive.
Yeah.
And there's a million questions that can't be answered. So you just, I take it. Okay. These are the facts. And then the hardest part was knowing when to fight and when not to fight, right? Because there are times where you have to be a caregiver and have to question doctors and stuff. But there are times where you just have to say, I could yell at the doctor all I want, but that doesn't change the fact that there's 15 tumors on her brain now. Like it allowed me to just say, okay, this is what life is right now. And the only way to go through it is unscripted.
Yeah. And acting training, yes, and acting training and improv training particularly teaches, you know, you need to be present. And boy, did you need to be present for your wife who was going through this and your daughters who were going through this. And I guess even for yourself.
Yeah, you had to be present and you had to, it's interesting, you had to listen to others and then you had to block others out. So you had to filter what information to take and what information not to take. You know, almost on stage or improv where I can, you know, I have to yes and, but I also have to filter and say, what do I want and what do I, you know, not want? Because a lot of people don't know what to say. And so people can come up to me all day long and say, you need to be positive. You need to be positive. And then I'm like, so if she passes, then I did something wrong because I wasn't positive enough. Like, that's on me. Like I'm being realistic. And it was hard to write about that because you will see a chapter where I say, I need to give up. And I even say, what would people think of that? What would people think do I sound like a monster? But at some point it was obvious. And giving up didn't mean, well, see you later. It was now my job to help transfer her to the next, whatever that may be, but to peacefully make that transition for her. So it wasn't like nothing else had to be done. It was just a realization of, all right, she needs a friend now, not a caregiver. I need to do the best I can with somebody who at the time was actually angry at me because she was binging on sugar and the cancer just wanted more and more sugar. And I was denying that. It was a very complex time. And it's just something that you had to be open to.
And you can't. And again, another thing that improv teaches you is that you can't judge what you're given. You have to respond to what you're given without judgment.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I was in one of the widows groups after Lisa passed, and I was fairly new to it, and we had a doctor's night where doctors would come in for this month, and they would answer any questions. So I had like 8 of them. You know, am I sleeping too much? Am I this? You know, all these medical questions. And one woman who was there for a widow who was there for a couple years already, her husband already passed a couple years ago, she started grilling the doctors of, well, why did they let him go home with a blood clot? Why? And it was a little awkward because even the doctors were trying to be nice and saying, well, we weren't there. Like, we don't know. And clearly your heart goes out to this woman. But I thought, you know, I can't be there in 2 years. I can't say, why did they come home? It's something where you have to accept the premise, accept what's given to you. And then what do you do with it? You know, kind of redoing that phrase because I couldn't be stuck. I wasn't strong enough to climb out of a hole. So I didn't want to jump into one.
Yeah. Well, that's incredibly self-aware. Thank goodness you had that ability.
Well, the self-aware, I mean, the whole book, the self-aware, that's the part of it. I mean, I longed for the days where, you know, I had a bad day or I couldn't sleep at night because the Chicago Bears lost an important game in week 9. I mean, I was yearning for those nights. Yeah. I mean, I took Haley to Gildas Club in Chicago. Based after Gilda Radner, for those who don't know, Gene Wilder founded. And Haley and I stopped for a hot dog. And instead of asking what's prettier, butterflies or ladybugs, Haley's saying, hey, Dad, we don't want Mom to die, right? And if she does, is this lady who's doing the class my new mommy? So, you know, being self-aware, I just had to absorb. I had to learn right then and there and be like, oh, my gosh, you could not but be self-aware, or else it was just going to get past me.
Hi, this is Cynthia Ryder, Executive Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and this is the podcast for the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Where can you RSE the RSE? This week, we're performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged in Gravesend, Swindon, and Shoreham, followed by performances the following week in Andover, Newport, Taunton, and Great Torrington. We thought about going to Lesser Torrington, but screw those guys. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Matt Croke about his new memoir, Yes And, A Journey of Hope Through Tragedy. I asked him about the mechanics of getting his book published.
Well, you know, the timing is interesting because I was probably going to publish it about 4 years ago before I got married to Cheryl. But once it wasn't really done and wasn't really sure I wanted to get out there. And so then, like I said, I got married to Cheryl and I waited a couple years. And jumping back into it, I was amazed at all the tools now for self-publishing because I'm not, although I have a performing background, I work at an autism center now in parent outreach and billing. And so I'm not a paid professional author. So self-publishing was the only route for me to take. To spend time getting an agent or doing all that, that wasn't going to work for me. There's enough people who are interested, get the word out now. And, you know, Amazon has a company called CreateSpace and there's another one called Lulu. And both of them, you can self-publish with ease. And if you use CreateSpace, it links right up into Amazon and the Kindle. And so I use CreateSpace and then I use 99designs.com and I don't, you know, not plugging, but that was, and that's a contest where you submit your idea. Every artist from all over the world give you ideas back. You filter them out, pick a bunch, and then you land on one, do revisions. And if you like it, whoever gets it is the winner of the contest and they get the money. It's like $300. Huh. And if you don't like any of them, you don't have to pay. So that took care of my cover. I actually did like some of that was my cover. And then I just watched a bunch of YouTube clips and there were guys about how to design, you know, putting in, a gutter, you know, the binding of the book and how to do margins and tabs and formulate and all that stuff. I just kind of learned from YouTube and was able to format, you know, my own book. And it was a blessing and a curse because it gave me all the control. But then again, it gave me all the control.
Right, right.
You know, so it was font size and things, but it was nice because I got to shape it how I wanted to. And then you upload it to Amazon or the CreateSpace. Once you approve it, it goes up on Amazon and you control the price. And so that part of it was very interesting. And I will say the self-publishing with today's tools, very user-friendly and, highly recommend if there's, you know, side projects someone's willing to do or, you know, and you get a discount of the books for yourself. So if I myself want to order, you know, 15 books, I get them at a much reduced rate as long as I want.
That's fantastic. I mean, I love that there's so many tools for everybody, for authors, for, you know, music makers, for filmmakers. There's so many more tools to get your work out there and have it be seen by the public without using the traditional, what do they call it, gatekeepers.
Well, even the traditional gatekeepers, I was looking at the numbers. I mean, even an average book that a big publisher gets, you're looking at 200 copies, you know. So really, so I'm going to, even if I get an agent, a publisher, and I don't really, you know, I'm not going to write 10 more books. At best, I sell 200 books, and they're not going to care about me. I'm not going to get any support, no background. I can sell 200 books on my own. So at that point, when it's niche and you have a group or whatever, these self tools are, they're great because it you know, can focus what you can do. I will suggest, though, that there's another company called Fiverr.com, and there you can find, you know, the deal is like for $5 for every 1,000 words, but I found a line editor, I found a content editor, you know, I found all sorts of people to, it kind of builds up, but if you have some capital, you really can get it looking pretty professional.
Well, so this is amazing. So then what's next, father of six, newly married, successful now author. What other worlds are left for you to conquer?
Well, so one of the reasons I like the title Yes And, because it's not just about living in the past and what happened and relaying that. The Autism Center for where I work, you know, I'm getting more into parent outreach and parent liaison. And that is a wonderful community to be a part of. The people in the autism community are just fantastic. And I'm trying to take what I learned and use it a bit as a bridge to help parents. You know, I still podcast for the By Your Side company, and every podcast, and these people didn't know my background, but almost every podcast where I interviewed a parent, inevitably the word grief comes up, the grieving of the loss of what they thought they were going to have with their child. And it's something I can relate to. So I'm taking this energy and I'm trying to morph it into the autism community of the empathy and getting that voice out there. You know, these parents, I feel, need a voice. I mean, we know about it as performers. And these parents who have a child on the spectrum, they're educators, they become medically savvy, they learn so much so fast. And, you know, everyone needs a voice. And so I'm trying to help parents find their voice when it's in this community. And so that's where I'm taking this energy and trying to parlay it to. That's kind of my goal.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your journeys via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner. Thanks, as always, to award-ignored author Matthew Croak. Web services by Ginger Power Limited. Music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Bryony Mounter. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Cynthia Ryder, Executive Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. I spent last weekend down in Ashland seeing the opening night performances of Julius Caesar, Henry IV Part 1, and Shakespeare in Love, and it was a fantastic time. Sort of Woodstock for theater Shakespeare nerds. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 533-1599th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And now here's Matt Croak, reading an excerpt from his memoir, Yes And, A Journey of Hope Through Tragedy.
Today is Lisa's first treatment of chemotherapy. As we walk into the waiting room, the first thing I notice is how much older all the other patients are from us. Some walk with canes, others go to sit down while the spouse helps steady them into their chair, and there are those who are dressed like they're headed out for a night on the town. An older generation philosophy of, if people can see us, then it's an event worth looking nice for. It's almost like we're in a senior center. I didn't prepare myself for seeing the normal age range of people affected by this disease to be so much older than us. Not sure why this surprises me. I wasn't exactly expecting a boy band concert clientele, but it would be nice to see some nose rings or possibly some tattoos. I look around to see if anyone else looks younger than us. No one does. But in one chair, a woman uses a computer, not an abacus. Technology. Good start. Lisa checks in at the front desk. I stop staring at the other people and redirect my focus to the candy jar that sits on the counter. I see it has root beer barrels. You really don't see those much anymore. Hey, even the candy here is old. First time here? The lady behind the desk asks. Lisa nods her head. It's rare for Lisa to substitute words with a physical gesture when answering a question. I'm sure the idea of chemotherapy will take some time to accept, and a verbal acknowledgement may just make the situation too real for her. Lisa's handed a clipboard with about 10 sheets of questions. I hate this part of the check-in process. It always seems to me like this is a way for front desk employees to keep patients busy and distract them from going back up to complain about the long wait time. Excuse me, nurse. I've been here for over an hour, and I was wondering if the doctor will be seeing me soon. Did you finish your 50-page family history essay supported by bibliography and citations? No, I'm only on page 37. I'm stuck on the question about comparing my pain cycle to the naming of each of the Great Lakes. Then please have a seat. The doctor will see you when you're finished. Ooh, and don't forget Lake Huron. Most people do. I sit next to Lisa. She reads the questions from the clipboard and looks up in the air to think of an answer, then back down to write. To slow the process of filling out these questionnaires, they make sure to list enough choices that are similar that you really have to think for a moment which one applies to you. Question: I lose concentration during the day. Choices: often, somewhat often, sometimes often, sometimes somewhat, average, not often, sometimes not often, rarely, often rarely, sometimes never, rarely never. I want to joke with Lisa about these questions, but she's been quiet today and I don't want her to think, sure, easy for you to joke around. You're not starting chemotherapy today. Lisa continues filling out the forms. I keep scanning the room and it dawns on me that most people brought their spouses. It's not that the patients are old. It's that the couples are old. They probably had a full life together before this horrible disease. Most likely been able to have kids and maybe even a few grandkids. Yes, they're sick, but oh, the stories they could tell from decades of being together. I instantly become jealous of old age and wish Lisa and I were in our 80s. Her name is called and we walk over to the counter. I didn't finish all the questions, Lisa says to the lady behind the desk. That's okay, the receptionist says. This should be enough. Aha, I wanted to yell. I knew it. You just wanted Lisa to stay busy and not bother you. You hear that, everyone? The paperwork's a trick. Attica! Attica! But instead of making a scene and upsetting Lisa, I take a few more pieces of root beer candy and put them in my pocket for later. I'll take my little victories where I can get them. The nurse takes us down to what seems like a never-ending hallway where curtains, not walls, have created little rooms on either side. On top of each curtain is a white plastic square with a bolded black number. You'll be in number 10, she tells us, points down the hall, and then heads back to the waiting area. I'm surprised she's left us. It's right out of an old movie where the cab driver won't take the strangers all the way to the haunted mansion. This is as far as I go. Just head down the muddy path and follow the lines of skulls to the house with the light shining from the attic. And might I add, I think you two are crazy for coming out this far. We walk down the hall, just the two of us. It's an airy walk towards our impersonal number 10 that hangs on a curtain. The urge to yell, "Dead man walking!" pops in my head. It immediately feels unfunny, and I'm disappointed my mind came up with it. As we pass the rooms, I see some of the curtains are closed. The faint sounds of television could be heard seeping through the fabric. In other rooms, the curtains are wide open with no one there. If you made a painting of it and hung it on a gallery, people would think it's a Norman Rockwell-esque portrait from Grandma's house. A brown leather recliner chair is the focus of the room. A smaller chair sits to the left for a guest to use. There's a television that hangs from the ceiling secured by a wide arm. A picture window looks out into Maney's High School soccer field. Teenage kids with hats and winter coats full of life and energy run around on the empty field, falling down hard and getting up quickly. Natural light fills a room from top and bottom. We pass another room where the curtain is open, but this time there's a man getting treatment. Now if you were to make a painting of this room, it would turn from cozy corner at Grandma's house to a surreal Salvador Dali imagery. You still have the setting of a snug, welcoming room, but now there's a man in his 70s who's the main focus. He has a blank expression on his face sitting in the recliner chair. His left arm facing up is fully extended. A needle sticks in the crease of his elbow. A small hose snakes upward through the tube leading to a plastic bag filled with clear liquid. He has a placid demeanor as if the substance he's receiving is full of Valium. His head sways ever so slightly, like a fishing bobber on a calm lake. His eyes focus on nothing, yet stare in tired comprehension for why he needs these treatments in the first place. I feel bad for looking. But he left his curtain open, and I'm trying to piece together what's going on in my life right now and what it might look like. Oddly enough, as we continue walking, I see more occupied rooms where curtains are open. In some of these rooms, the chairs next to recliners are filled with spouses, friends, and supporters. They pretend to be reading or watching TV, but as soon as we come into their view, you can see them looking at you, like a lifer in prison checking out the newest victim and trying to assess the same thing I've been trying to assess. How sick is my loved one compared to the others here? However, after one glance at a young, healthy-looking Lisa, they turn their eyes away as to say, "Ah, false alarm. Just a husband and wife coming to visit Grandma or Grandpa. But give it a few months." When we make this walk with Lisa's bald head and her pregnant belly, my guess is the heads will no longer turn away, but stare unapologetically. And scene.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.